You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. Zero Logon is being actively exploited in the wild. The old Gremlin ransomware gang picks on Russian targets. Thought Fancy Bear was done with NATO? Think again. The U.S. Treasury Department sanctions more organizations and individuals for malign influence operations. Betsy Carmelite from BAH on vaccine laboratory cybersecurity. Our guest is Shenna Tarnish from Comcast Business with insights for small businesses concerned with COVID-19-related phishing. And four of the defendants indicted in the eBay cyber stalking case have chosen their pleas. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, September 24th, 2020. Zero Logon exploitation is no longer merely a theoretical possibility. Microsoft has seen the Windows Server vulnerability being actively attacked in the wild. ZDNet reminds all that Samba file sharing software is also susceptible to this bug and must be updated as well. Computing has an update on the patches available for Zero Logon. That the Zero Logon vulnerability is a serious risk isn't in dispute. The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency took the unusual step last week of issuing the federal agencies it oversees a binding operational directive, telling them to get their skates on and patch by midnight Monday. Those agencies were given a deadline of last midnight to get back to CISA and let them know that the proper patches had been applied. Group IB says a new ransomware group they're calling Old Gremlin is currently active against Russian banks and corporations. Old Gremlin is phishing with emails that represent themselves as coming from a variety of legitimate third parties whom the email recipients might be predisposed to trust. RBC, Rosbiznes Consulting, a large Russian media holding company, the self-regulatory financial organization SRO MIR, an unnamed Russian metallurgical holding company, an unnamed dental clinic, and crossing the Belarusian border to another country in the near abroad, the Minsk Tractor Work. As Group IB, Singapore-based but with Russian roots, Old Gremlin's target list is surprising. Group IB's report says, quote, "It is common knowledge that Russian hackers have an unspoken rule about not working within Russia and post-Soviet countries. Yet Old Gremlin, made up of Russian speakers, is actively attacking Russian companies, banks, industrial enterprises, medical organizations, software developers. According to Group IB expert estimations, since the spring, Old Gremlin has conducted at least 7 phishing campaigns." End quote. This seems to be sailing pretty close to the unforgiving wind, or to mix the metaphor, a little bit like tugging on Superman's cape, and it will be interesting to see how long they continue to get away with it. They've been at it since March, and the Kremlin is probably not too pleased with Old Gremlin. Unless there are wheels within wheels here, Old Gremlin is going to draw the attention of the organs in an unpleasant way. As Bleeping Computer summarizes, the gang is using Tiny Posh and Tiny Node backdoors, Tiny Crypt ransomware, and various third-party tools for reconnaissance and lateral movement. So far, Old Gremlin has been active in Russia only, but there are signs it may be working toward much wider attacks elsewhere. A ransomware attack has hit Tyler Technologies, a large IT service provider to U.S. state and local government agencies. The company has disclosed that it's working to restore its systems, and that while some data were exposed, as is now normal in ransomware attacks, it's not believed that any customer's software was affected. Reuters notes that Tyler's services are used by states and counties for both emergency response coordination and for sharing election information. Security Week describes Quo Intelligence's research into a new Zebrosy cyber espionage campaign directed against NATO. Zebrosy is by consensus held to be a Russian operation. While its exact organizational niche isn't entirely clear, most observers think it's associated with Moscow's GRU, that is, Fancy Bear. The group's eponymous malware, Zebrosy Delphi, used NATO exercises as its fishbait. The operation's command and control infrastructure is located in France, and Quo Intelligence has let the French authorities know where to look for it. The U.S. Treasury Department yesterday sanctioned more Russian individuals and organizations for their involvement in malign influence operations, The Hill reports. Most of them are tied to the previously sanctioned Yevgeny Prigozhin, known as Putin's chef, because of the way in which the entrees he once catered served as his entree to the Russian oligarchy. Mr. Prigozhin is best known for having been one of the organizers and funders of the Internet Research Agency, the St. Petersburg troll farm that gained notoriety during the last U.S. election cycle. He also pioneered a more sophisticated form of trolling, outsourcing and offshoring much of the work to a lot of contractors in the Central African Republic. And finally, there are developments in the very strange case we first discussed back in June, where eBay employees, now former eBay employees, were charged with various forms of illegal harassment of a mom-and-pop newsletter that had published notes not always to the liking of eBay's then leadership. Of the seven defendants charged, four have decided to plead guilty to cyberstalking the couple who ran the e-commerce Bytes newsletter. Stephanie Pop, Stephanie Stockwell, Brian Gilbert, and Veronica Zaya yesterday filed their intention to enter guilty pleas to federal charges on October 8th. All are former members of eBay's security and global intelligence teams. The other three defendants are presumably still weighing their options. The response to the newsletter, beyond being illegal and morally loathsome, seems quite out of proportion to anything the couple who published the newsletter wrote. They weren't particularly inveterate critics of eBay, nor did they seem to write anything particularly scurrilous or defamatory. Such complaints as the ones they put out were of the anodyne sort any business inevitably attracts. And what was the response of eBay's security and global intelligence team? Anonymous email and Twitter threats, deliveries of live cockroaches and a bloody Halloween pig mask, clandestine surveillance, and shipping adult material to the victim's neighbors in the victim's names. How in the world all of this could have seemed to be a good idea at the time is difficult to fathom. The incident will at some point provide, we imagine, interesting lessons about organizational culture and the dangers of groupthink. Ongoing, cascading, impulsive bad judgment isn't just for teenagers. Hey everybody, today I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime.
The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
Jenna Tarnish is Vice President of Cybersecurity Product Management at Comcast Business. She joins us with valuable insights for small businesses concerned with COVID-19-related phishing.
Hackers are using tried-and-true approaches like phishing and malware and denial-of-service attacks to exploit businesses, especially amid COVID. And we're seeing a much higher rate of that. So, you know, phishing and ransomware will remain the biggest threats to businesses of all sizes. And you want to make sure that you're really cautious of those campaigns that are going on. You know, we saw 150% rise in the number of new domains related to COVID since March. And they use keywords like corona or drug or vaccine and test kits. And, you know, we've blocked queries of these newly registered domains nearly 13 times. So as much as we talk about phishing and ransomware and train our employees, it's still a place where cyber criminals are multiplying the number of messages and ways to influence consumers. And, you know, from a DDoS perspective, attack traffic has significantly increased and more businesses are being targeted by cyber criminals. As a result, during these attacks, businesses aren't able to serve their customers online or transact with supply chain partners or maybe even interact with their employees, which all causes disruption and loss for the business. So, you know, it's really important that as more COVID scamming opportunities arise, you know, even like this, the stimulus relief came out, it caused more phishing offers related to, you know, assisting with payment receipts. So as the pandemic prolongs, businesses should be really sensitive to these phishing and malware campaigns that could surface.
Are there any areas when it comes to cybersecurity, are there any areas that you feel aren't getting the attention that they deserve?
I guess I would say education. I think that is really key to the whole program of cybersecurity. While technology is very important, training our employees and businesses on these types of threats is important. But, you know, to err is human. So technology is important as well, especially that which has automatic updates. And you're not having to rely on people to configure or load. So getting services by reputable companies that can automatically, you know, include the latest domains that are malicious and automatically protect the business are really important.
That's Shenna Tarnish from Comcast Business.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Betsy Carmelite. She is a senior associate at Booz Allen Hamilton. Betsy, it's always great to have you back. I wanted to touch today on some of the work that you and your colleagues are doing when it comes to cybersecurity in the lab. We've been hearing a lot about vaccine research, those sorts of things. What are some of the things that you all are tracking?
Sure. We're very much tracking how to keep labs secure with such a rapid increase in data generation, which ultimately introduces vulnerabilities. We're definitely seeing the increase in data, certainly PII, PHI, financial data, but also the increased concern for network lab equipment, such as, for example, petabytes of genomic data, and securing all of the advanced technology that now exists in labs.
What about the velocity that labs find themselves running at today? I'm thinking about all those labs who are trying to keep up with, you know, the demand for things like COVID testing. Does that mean that it's easy for some security things to slip through the cracks?
Sure. And I think some of that kind of lends to the research culture. And in recent weeks, we've seen this with some high-profile attempts to steal vaccine data and helping researchers understand the risk of what is an inherent part of their roles and jobs, which is data sharing, being collaborative, how much we collaborate, how we collaborate securely. And so given the nature of their jobs, especially in the current COVID-19 environment and the circumstance like a pandemic where we want to be working together, we really need to be balancing, you know, how much we collaborate in the security around that collaboration. We're looking at information transfer and then the possibility of compromise of the integrity or confidentiality of that research information.
Well, share with us some insights of what are some of the specific concerns that you have. What are some of the things that you all are tracking here?
Sure. So in recent weeks, we've seen some of the reported high-profile attempts to steal COVID-19 vaccine data. We've seen the Department of Justice accusations alleging Chinese intelligence services that are targeting that COVID vaccine research. We've also seen similar accusations directed toward Russia that may have been targeting universities, organizations, healthcare providers as well. We're seeing some highly sophisticated threat actors that are obviously cause for concern in a heightened crisis situation.
Is there a cultural element here as well? Or are the folks who are working on these hard problems, the scientists, do they generally need to be brought up to speed on the cybersecurity elements to keep their research safe?
Yeah, and I it's definitely an increased awareness that may not have come naturally to their jobs as they're performing their scientific research. The awareness of how much we collaborate, how we do it securely, do we increase the levels of security to protect the intellectual property? But then we do we do that at a risk of decrease to information sharing and promoting that information sharing? So that's it's a really hard problem steeped in technology, but to your point, also in the culture of performing scientific research.
So for the folks who are in this line of work, what sort of recommendations do you have for them?
Sure. I would say that it really boils down to some basic cyber hygiene to keep these labs safe and also to keep the research data safe and the lab teams as well. First, we would say examine the business processes in place prior to adoption of any technology, whether it's a collaboration tool or any changes to the network environment. For example, isolation of that internal research from the other parts of the network would be critical. So looking at segregated networks to reduce that chance of attack. And secondly, really knowing your use cases for workflows and processes and choosing your tools and technology. How are you actually going to use that tool to perform your work? And do you really know all the use cases that could, you know, be used properly or lead to misuse? And then when you're choosing that technology, look at the possibility for flexibility to change the functionality when you're moving from your current use to a possible to-be future state of how you're going to be using that technology.
Hmm. All right. Well, interesting stuff. Betsy Carmelite, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time, keep you informed, and it's so good, cats ask for it by name. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Harold Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.